Oh, hello, I didn't see you there. This is Dr. Thaddeus Venture, and you're listening to the Long Box Guys. Whatever that means.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a mecca for peace in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey, Gad, what are the Long Box Guys going to do tonight, Brain?
The same thing the Long Box Guys do every night, Pinky. Drink and talk about comics. They're useless to taking over the world. Yes!
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of The Long Box Guys. With me, as always, are some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid. Mike Manning, how you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking a Hefeweizen from Alviso Breweries or something like that. Oh, Aliso Mills, or I don't know. I'm on my third one.
Alyssa Milano Mills?
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. We're in the Tommy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing okay. I am drinking some Woodford Reserve, some delicious Woodford Reserve bourbon.
That sounds delicious. Josh, and you look good. You look great. What are you doing? How you doing? And what are you drinking?
I'm doing pretty good today, and I am drinking one of the line of experimental brews, Curiosity number 88 from Treehouse. They put a nice little Triceratops on the can for me, my favorite dinosaur, and it is a delicious double IPA. I'm enjoying it.
But correct me if I'm wrong, are you wearing a Bullet Bourbon t-shirt?
I am wearing a Bullet Bourbon t-shirt.
I love me some Bullet Bourbon, too.
It's and a great tour if you ever get down there. Go do the distillery tour at Bullet. It's fantastic.
Where is that distillery?
Just outside Louisville, about 30, 40 minutes out.
All right. I will take that trip. I love Bullet Bourbon. I am drinking a Thompson's Water Seal, the only scotch that costs $8.88 when it's on sale, for a handle. That is for a handle of Thompson's Water Seal scotch. And I am well sealed from it. But somewhere far, far away in the distant future, we'll have replicators to make our scotch. And in that far future, that's going to be Star Trek. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. Star Trek in comic book form. And we're going to get in a little bit about everything else, because I think we kind of have to touch on it. Mikey, why don't you tell us about Star Trek when they first came into comic book form?
So Gold Key Comics were the first comic book company to license the Star Trek franchise. If you haven't had a chance to watch The Toys That Made Me, they have an episode on Star Trek toys, which is awesome. Basically, if you had a pulse and a dollar, you could license the Star Trek merchandise from Universal. Because they didn't care. They were going to make their money no matter what. So Gold Key started it. And surprisingly, even though the TV show lasted only 3 years, the original series comic book for Gold Key lasted 11. Originally, they did not even know what the cast of characters looked like. They only had publicity stills, and they didn't have one for Mr. Scott. So Mr. Scott does not look anything like he did on the TV show for the first several episodes, much like poor Chewbacca in the Star Wars comic books.
That's a good point. What do they have? What do they have Mr. Scott look like? Do you remember?
He was a skinny blonde dude with a blue shirt.
All right. Well, that's the wrong color shirt for certain. That's not even deep nerd tech there.
Yeah, he looks nothing like James Doohan.
So how many different companies made comic books for Star Trek?
That's a great question. Originally, like I said, Gold Key had the license until 1978, and then they lost the license, and when the Star Trek movie came out, Marvel Comics had licensed the rights for the movie. So they did the movie comic book and had 18 issues. Unfortunately for Marvel Comics, they only had the license for the movie, so they could only use characters who were in the movie. They couldn't use any characters from the original TV show that didn't make any appearances in the movies. And it sucked. But then DC Comics took over, and they started running with it. And they had that comic book for a number of years, leading all the way up to and including the Next Generation series. So they, at the same time they were doing an original series, they were also doing the Next Generation. And the Next Generation series and one of their runs on the original series, they put them on Baxter Print Comics, which, if you don't remember, they had these newsstand comics, and then they had the deluxe edition Baxter prints, which were a lot nicer paper. In fact, if you pull out a comic from the same era, if you get it off a newsstand versus the Baxter print, you can, the Baxter print paper is so well done that you can, it's still colorful while the newspapers may have faded, right? So the Next Generation had that going on. In the interim, they kept the license for those two properties, but Malibu Comics actually got Deep Space Nine. And so for a while there, they had two different comic book companies publishing Star Trek comics, to the point where Deep Space Nine and The Next Generation had a crossover that was co-published by both Malibu and DC Comics. Then they ended up losing the license for it again. It went over to Marvel for a little while. And its latest home has been IDW, which has been producing a shit ton of different comic book Star Trek-related series. Anything that you like, you can probably find over on IDW. And they also managed to print some of the older Marvel prints in graphic novel form.
I wasn't a huge fan of the Marvel ones. It just didn't strike me. I didn't love the artwork. Didn't like the writing all that much. And I didn't think they did much.
Yeah, they had, Marvel was weird because they had, for a while, they had the rights to Deep Space Nine. They got that from Malibu. And they had Voyager going on. And then they had a comic book called Starfleet Academy, which had five people going through the academy, including Nog, the Ferengi from Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, no, that might have been.
It wasn't very good.
I was going to say, was that any? All right, that's too bad. I'm sure we all have our favorite ones. If you don't mind, I'll go first just because I'm so excited to talk about how much I liked the Mirror Mirror episodes that was put up by IDW. These are just like the original Star Trek series run on Mirror Mirror. So if you don't know what Mirror Mirror is, it's a dark universe where everything about Star Trek and Starfleet is reversed. Being generous and kind is seen as a weakness. Mercilessly conquering any civilization you come across is the norm. And the prime directive is to conquer at all costs. So the way to become captain is to either kill the captain and take over his seat, or, you know, ruthlessly make your way through until you become a captain. In some other way. So we follow James T. Kirk on his relentless path to becoming a captain against Christopher Pike. Christopher Pike, of course, from the original Star Trek series. So he has to take out Christopher Pike, and he does so using a number of machinations. Terrific storyline. It follows that almost all the way up to the end, and then they do a little time jump, which I know isn't everyone's favorite, but it goes over to where Picard is in the timeline, in the Mirror Mirror universe, and how Picard has to be both Picard and evil at the same time. And it actually works really well. My favorite thing about it is that Picard shaves his head because he thinks it makes him look like a badass, not because he's bald. So, yeah, got that going for it. It's a really fun romp. It really plays around a lot with the characters. You get to see an evil Spock. You get to see a manipulative, crazy McCoy. Even Nurse Callahan, who is McCoy's right-hand girl, usually is, you know, wearing a super slinky outfit and doing some behind-the-scenes backstabbing.
Is it Nurse Chapel, you mean?
Oh, Nurse Chapel. Thank you very much for that correction. I was trying to find it, and I thought I had it. Nurse Chapel, you are 100% correct, my friend. Did anyone read that particular run?
I have not.
It's really good. You're going to like it, Tommy. I know you. I know your taste. I don't often say I think you're going to like something, but I think you'll like that one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't really – I hadn't read any Star Trek before we proposed this episode, so I ran out and jumped onto Comixology and pulled down some fairly random stuff. I didn't see that one on there, or wasn't at the top of the list for the cheapest ones to read or on Unlimited, so that didn't make my list, apparently.
I got mine on Unlimited.
It wasn't Unlimited? Damn it. What's with the sort freaking algorithm for Star Trek?
They wanted you to pay, you bastard.
I know. I did buy one. I bought Star Trek Countdown, which was what happens just before the reboot. So we're just before the Chris Pine reboot. So it's sort of the origin of Nero and the interactions between Spock and the Romulans. And while I do find that time period interesting and I like those characters, man, that comic is dry. It is like – I mean, it's Romulans and Vulcans talking to each other. It's not exactly
So there's –
I understand what you are about saying. I also understand what you're referring to. God damn it, people.
So there's swordplay, but it's verbal swordplay. It's
verbal swordplay, all within very, very tight grammatical guidelines and all within the certainly reined-in logic of two races who are about to come to blows. But I did enjoy the I enjoyed the first reboot movie. I read some of the comics that were sort of in the stratosphere around that, but the comics did not strike the tone that the movies hit for me. They were they just sort of creeped along and never really made it into to something that I really wanted to invest a lot of time into, unfortunately.
I think if you do find the Mirror Mirror ones, just read a couple of them and you'll agree that those are way better. Tommy, you're itching over there. You want to jump in. I see you. See you trying to get to the mic.
So I was going to say, so the IDW Star Trek 2011 to 2016 run is – it starts out mostly with sort of – rebooting Star Trek the original series plot lines, redone in sort of the reboot Chris Pine characters. They just tweak the stories a little bit. Like they do the Landro story with the entire civilization being medieval and being run by an AI. The only difference is that the AI was caused by a Starfleet experiment instead of an alien civilization type of thing. So there's like all these different little tweaks to old Star Trek stories in that run. But I enjoyed those comics as well. And they also, towards kind of like the later volumes of that, did new stories. Like they had a story devoted entirely to a guy who is a red shirt and proud of it. And of course he got hurt in that issue, but he didn't die. But he was like, I know all the stories about being a red shirt, but we're the lifeblood of Starfleet. And, you know, it's just this whole kind of like devotion to being a red shirt. And so like that's that kind of whole long volumes and run sort of paid homage to the original Star Trek, and I thought that was kind of neat. Also, I kind of enjoyed some of the crossover events, like the Star Trek Next Generation, they had a Doctor Who crossover where the Borg and Cybermen are working together, that I found kind of interesting, being a Doctor Who fan. And there's also like a Planet of the Apes Star Trek crossover that was kind of interesting. There's been a lot of different Star Trek properties around.
Yeah, they've also had crossovers with Legion of Superheroes and the Green Lantern Corps. So if you're interested in superheroes with your Star Trek, you can check those out too. My favorites, which you already talked about, were the Mirror comics. Either the, you know, Through the Mirror, Shattered Mirror, whatever one you want to talk about. But I also really enjoyed, there's a series by John Byrne where he is a huge Star Trek fan. For those of you who aren't aware of who John Byrne is, he was one of the great artists for Marvel Comics and also one of the a great writer in his own right. His run on Fantastic Four was amazing. He loved Star Trek so much that he took the original series, took screenshots of the different frames, and then wrote his own Star Trek episodes to go with those screenshots from the TV show, and he mixed and matched them and put them in whatever order he wanted. It was really cool.
That is dedication. That's like that to me feels like guys who do or folks who do stop motion photography. Like, you have time and commitment to something that very few people can do and put some effort into, and that feels like it's the same vein there. That guy's a fan. Yeah, if you're doing that, if you are rocking that sort of MO, you are – I mean, you've watched episodes, stopped, pulled random freaking screens off, bubbled dialogue, and then rearranged them into comics from a different visual media. You, my friend, are a fan. You've transcended a little bit for me.
Yeah, I break my own arm off patting myself on the back when I make a funny gif that I pull out of something. So kudos to you, my brother.
Yeah, get in there, Byrne. Do your thing. You earned it.
Damn it.
Which is amazing because you think John Byrne is a phenomenal artist, but he's like, I don't want to draw a comic book. I'd rather cut and paste.
Yeah.
Drawing is hard.
Somebody else has already put this together.
I mean, I would read that four-paneled. Like, if he just four-paneled that.
Yeah, I'd meet you right there.
Where is that now? Like, I would read that.
I think you can get the license for that pretty easy.
I wonder if we can do a four-panel cartoon strip of, like, four gifs that totally explain the movie. But I could make this happen. That was tangential. I'm sorry. I'm going to get to that later. Does anyone else have anything else about Star Trek? The cartoon was pretty good, too. Do you guys remember the cartoon?
Yeah. Yeah, and actually, I tried to rewatch it, and your assessment is just not true. I mean, if the original Star Trek was fantastic, right? Mm-hmm. And it was on a shoestring budget. And then you made a cartoon with all the same voices, like all the voice actors are the characters, and somehow the production value and the background sets of a cartoon were worse.
Oh, that's terrible.
There was I get in He-Man, he jumps over. Every time He-Man jumps, he jumps over the same river. It doesn't matter where he is. It doesn't matter if he's in your living room. He's jumping over that river.
Yeah.
Because I am not changing that plate, right? Star Trek cartoon, even worse. Like, that had one door and three colored walls, and you didn't know where the hell on the ship those people were. Wow. You managed to drop production value from live action to cartoon. You were trying. You were trying to save money there. Someone was like, you know what? How much money is that going to save me? Just give me a red, green, and a blue wall, and we'll be fine. But I can draw – no. No panels. No, no details.
It's going to cost you like a bagel. I'll do it for a bagel.
Josh, they had to pay huge licensing fees.
Well, they had to keep the voice actors. I was like, well, you can't –
they had to pay all the voice actors. I mean, that's where all the money went.
But what you ended up with the blandest cartoon sets of all time.
All right, I'll give you this. I'll charge you with this. Watch it again. Well, listen to it again. Don't watch it.
I would think a teleplay. It would be improved as a teleplay. You're right, Tom. I'll watch it in the car. I'll listen to it in the car.
Because it is all the actors, and because the sets are so terrible. Oh no, a giant space lizard's attacking. Has to be part of the dialogue because they don't show the space lizards. They just run away from whatever's off screen that looks like a space lizard because they didn't spend the bagel to fucking draw the space lizard.
So, yes, I will accept the Star Trek cartoons as teleplays, but I will not accept the cartoons.
Well, all right then. Sorry for that loud smacking I just did for no reason whatsoever. That was loud even to me.
You lip smack the shit out of you right now.
I'm getting old. I'm getting that dry mouth that old men get.
Yeah, I should have a beer.
I should have a beer. I think I will after we get to the next segment. Does anyone have any last words about the Star Trek comic books?
Yes.
Was anyone else?
I was really expecting you to come up with a drink that was possibly a Jim Beam Me Up. Like, you guys are, like, I don't. There was a lot of easy ins here for you guys on the hard alcohol. And I was just expecting more from you guys. I'm a little disappointed.
You're especially right, from you, Tom.
A Jim Beam Me Up should have been on the menu. I'm sorry I didn't. Romulan Ale does exist. We bought some last time we were in Vegas. Vegas used to have this terrific Star Trek experience over at the old MGM. I think we all went there, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad, really. I liked it.
It was amazing. It wasn't. Yeah. It was not bad.
Those Klingons tried to get into a fight with us.
Yeah.
Like, literally, they were really itching for a fight. And they're lucky they were much larger than us.
Oh, they're lucky that they towered over us and made us look like little mousy men.
They hired some big-ass motherfuckers to play the Klingons. So.
Yeah. I think the Klingons just doubled as the bouncers.
We
had a great time in the casino. Part of it was all Star Trek themed. One of the slot machines was almost indecipherable. I mean, you could kind of tell what was going on, but it was all in an alien language. They really could have just been fucking us over on that one. But I played it anyways. It was fun.
Me and Mark got really fucked up on that warp core breach.
Oh, yeah.
They were giant mixed drinks with dried ice in them. They were basically fish bowls with some purple liquid and dried ice in them. And, like, I think they wouldn't let you order them if there were fewer than three people at the table.
Yeah.
So, we were banging those things down like they were going out of business. Ironically, they were going out of business because that.
How did that not do better? It was packed when we
went. It did not. It was not there. It was there way shorter than they had planned for. And it's sort of depressingly hilarious if you go back to that same section because it still has all the space theme stuff with no explanation whatsoever because they didn't afford or want to redo any of it. So there's just like rocket ships and bullshit sitting around. But they had to strip all the Star Trek specific stuff out. So it's just generic space stuff there, and it's depressingly funny.
Which seems weird because doesn't MGM own Star Trek? Like, they couldn't keep the license for the fucking casino shit?
Apparently not.
Come on, man.
From themselves? How does that work? I'm no lawyer.
Yeah.
I'm no lawyer, sir. Oh, that's a sentence that gets you in a lot of trouble.
Although I will say, have you guys all watched the Toys That Made Us, the Star Trek episode?
I have not watched the Star Trek episode
I haven't watched
yet.
Any of that series.
So one of the companies was like, we paid $5,000 for the Star Trek license and made $50 million with toy sales. The shuttlecraft that you see in the original series was only 3/4 scale. So if you ever see them coming in or going out, you'll see they're ducking because they couldn't actually stand in it. But they couldn't afford a shuttle. But the model company that did the model for the Enterprise also wanted to do a shuttlecraft. But you never saw the shuttlecraft in the early episodes of the original series because they didn't have it yet. But the model company actually built that 3/4 scale model so they could then sell kids the model shuttlecraft.
Well, that was a wise investment. Yeah, $5,000 for $50 million. Good on them.
I'm no mathematician, but that's like four times as much.
At least.
At least.
At least. I mean, that's good stuff.
That is good stuff. All right, I think that does it for Star Trek for us.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
LT, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I have Star Trek, Harlan Ellison, City on the Edge of Forever.
You son of a bitch. I was going to talk about that, but completely forget about it.
How can it be at the front and the back of the long box, guys? You guys, you know, I should have some geographic
page.
Separation here. It's a geographical oddity. 2 weeks from everywhere.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
And it's about time travel.
I did have one other question about Star Trek. Did anyone read the Green Lantern one?
No.
Damn it, I'm going to have to go read that one. All right, LT, go ahead.
So, in the Star Trek series, this City on the Edge of Forever was the episode with the gateway that allowed the crew member that had been jacked up on drugs to go back into the 20th century in the Depression era and prevent this woman that Kirk loved from dying. And she was supposed to die, and it set everything in the world into a different path and changed everything. And so Kirk and Spock had to go back in time and stop him from making that subtle change to the timeline. And Josh, you probably hated this episode as a child. You probably was like, well, who built a fucking gateway that allowed time travel? Well, originally it wasn't supposed to be a gateway. It was supposed to be a city that was controlled by these elders, but due to budget constraints, they couldn't do that on the TV show. But Harlan Ellison had wrote it as this giant, majestic city off in this distance on this alien planet that had these guardians that were guarding the city. And it was a slightly different storyline, but very similar to what ended up on screen. And Dave Tipton, Scott Tipton, kind of reworked it, the script, so that they could adapt it for comic book form. It was done with art by J.K. Woodward, and the artwork is absolutely fantastic. It's all painted, and it's an amazing, amazing adaptation of that storyline. And it's that classic story where Kirk and Spock go back into the Depression era. Spock is looked at as a foreigner. He's treated with all of the kind of racial issues that the Asian immigrants were having at that time. And Kirk was there kind of, you know, working his way, trying to get him and Spock back to get the timeline on track. He falls in love with this woman who is a nun who is running a shelter. And it's just a great, great story. She was all pacifist. She was trying to promote peace and love. And Tom, I think you have something to say.
She fell in love with a nun.
It's a nun. She's a nun.
All true.
Sorry.
But
that is your Hudson Hawks second for the day.
Yes.
Drink.
So like all good science fiction from Star Trek, not only does it deal with relevant social issues that they were facing at the time, but it also deals with moral quandaries.
It also turns Star Trek from science fiction into fantasy. Carry on.
Yes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum.
And of course, in the story, if she'd stayed alive and her views on pacifism and being kind to each other had propagated, then the timeline would have changed and all of Starfleet would never have existed, et cetera, and so forth, because, you know, everything would have been slightly off. And it was just a great, great story, and it was a great adaptation of that story, and the art is absolutely fantastic, and you should all go and buy it and read it.
I own it.
And Mike,
well, you should.
Do you agree?
Yes.
Do you agree that the art is fantastic?
Yes, that's why I completely forgot about it when we were talking about our favorite series. I wish I had, though. I would have stolen your fucking thunder.
I will not purchase your time travel trash.
No time travel trash for you. Mikey, what do you got for the long box, buddy?
At the front of the long box, I have the latest volume of Doctor Doom from Marvel Comics, because my good friend Tom has been singing the praises, and after I checked out the Doctor Strange, I was like, you know what, let me check out a little Doctor Doom. And you, sir, are correct. The Doctor Doom series is essentially what happens if Doctor Doom gets framed for being one of the world's biggest terrorists. Because at the very beginning of the book, they are creating a black hole on the moon in order to solve global warming. Don't ask me how. And Dr. Doom's whole view is there's nothing that could possibly go wrong with having a black hole on the moon. You're all idiots. We're all going to die. And it's a good series. I love when he fights Union Jack.
Or, not much of a fight, but okay.
Yeah, sure.
Union Jack, come on. Yeah, that'd be rad.
Union Jack wins.
Kind of. So, he wasn't trying hard. Yeah. I like the fact that he beats up and he sends his henchman out to get a CNN reporter that he thought was kind of rude, and he hangs him from the ceiling. Hey, someone make sure he gets fed.
Yeah.
That's...
As he's walking out, his minion is like, anything else, sir? Yes. Let's find out more about Steve. Steve should not have said shit to him on that interview. He should have let him speak.
As I recall, he says, bring me the one they call
Steve.
that was great. It's a fun series. It's kind of like what supervillains do when they're not really being supervillains. Also, because at one point he's on the run and he meets up with Morgan Le Fay or one of the other big magical bads. And she's just renting an apartment on the east side of Brooklyn, and it's rent controlled, so she doesn't care that it's a shithole. So, hey,
when you're
hiding in my apartment.
Yeah.
Come on. That's a great series. Thank you for finally reading that one. I really had a lot of fun with it.
Yep.
Now, earlier we talked about tangents, but that is your world, Josh. Got a tangent for us?
Yeah, so I was – a lot of the music I've been listening to – I'm sorry, the new music that I listen to, I actually find from NPR's Tiny Desk Concerts. Anybody?
Yep.
The Tiny Desk thing?
Sure. Fun stuff.
And I was listening to Jenna Bell. Has anyone listened to the lovely voice of Jenna Bell?
Missed that one.
Yes.
So if you get a chance, and I implore all you listeners, especially if you are a fan of Soundgarden and you want to listen to – wait, is that the – yeah, Black Hole Sun? Yeah. Jenna Bell's version of Black Hole Sun is haunting, and I think the best cover of Black Hole Sun I have heard to date. And there are a lot of covers of that song. So I would say, what are some of your favorite unexpected covers of music you love that have just come into your world?
I'm so glad you asked this, because I was just talking to a person a couple of days ago. The reason I love covers so much is you can't write the song that made you love music, but you can cover it. And I think that happens sometimes. Sometimes a really good artist is going to cover the song that made them love music, and it's magic. So one of my favorites right off the bat, Alien Ant Farm's
Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal, that's so good. And they say, this is one of the songs that made us love music. And I'm like, I feel that. I feel that.
And we were on tour with them for a bit. They were nice kids, and horrible things happened to them. And we know those good. Tom and I were on the Warped Tour for a bit. You were on for a couple of shows. I was on for a lot of shows.
Yeah.
For that tour on the East Coast, I did 19 locations with them.
Wow.
And those kids were super nice. They were super young. They were just coming in. Their cover of Smooth Criminal is, I say, better than the original. And then. It was probably 5 or 6 years later, and their tour van got into an accident in Europe, and the lead singer had his hip and back broke. But I think eventually they came back, but those guys had a tough turn. But I do agree, it's a fantastic cover. Nice kids, Alien Ant Farm. Go support those guys. I don't know what happened to them, honestly. I should put some time in to finding out if those guys are okay, because they were really nice folks on the tour.
Alien Ant Farm, are you okay? Are you okay, Alien Ant Farm? Are you okay?
Is that too
soon?
Okay,
Alien.
I don't know. We'll find
out. Alien, are you okay? Can you tell us? All right.
I'm just saying, Tom, if they're all dead, it's too soon.
Yeah, it's too soon. They were super sweet kids. I kind of remember them now. I remember them in the chow line. They were
young,
just
young kids when we were there. Yeah.
Morgan James and the Skivvies do a ton of terrific covers. Morgan James coming to town. She has a haunting voice. Beautiful, beautiful young lady. And her cover of Not the Shape of My Heart by Sting is one of my new favorites. Tommy, now you're one of my go-to guys on music. I give you all the respect in the world. You know music, my friend. What do you got?
Andy DeFranco's cover of The Hurricane, originally done by Bob Dylan. Concrete Blonde's cover of Little Wing, originally done by, of course, Jimi Hendrix.
Oddly, I'm going to interject here real quick. I do not consider other people singing Bob Dylan songs as covers.
Oh, come on. Jimi Hendrix's cover of All Along the Watchtower?
It's not a cover. It's Jimi Hendrix of all. Jimi Hendrix's All Along the Watchtower is one of my favorite songs. It was written by Bob Dylan, but Bob Dylan wrote songs for other people to sing, and coincidentally, sometimes he also sang them.
That's not a bad point. That's a good point.
I don't consider people singing Dylan songs as covers.
All right. With the caveat of Dust in the Wind, because that's a Bob Dylan song to me.
That's fair.
The Ship song done by Amanda Palmer. And Gin and Juice done by Richard Cheese.
No. Gin and Juice done by Hayseed Dixie. Have you heard that one?
I like the lounge version.
That's fine, but Hayseed Dixie does a country version of Gin and Juice. Rolling on my porch, Gin and Juice, laid back. My mind on my money, and my money on my mind. It's a country song that should have been a country song. It really should have been.
Another recent one for me is, and I really want to like this band, and I'm trying to, and I'm having a hard time. But there's a band called Clutch, and they do a cover of Fortunate Son, and it's an amazing cover, and I really want to like their other music, and it's not going to happen.
But I got a couple bands like that.
That cover is so good.
Mikey, what do you got over there, buddy?
So two instantly came to mind. One you're probably not have heard of. It's a bluegrass band, a family called the Petersons, and they do a cover of Glen Campbell's Gentle on My Mind, which is just phenomenal. If you haven't heard it, go check it out on YouTube. And, of course, the second one is Johnny Cash's version of Hurt.
Oh, yeah, that's
that is just haunting.
That album from Cash is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It should have been written for that fucker, right? It's like it was written for Johnny Cash.
And then also, if we're going to go with covers of Johnny Cash, Sunday Morning, the Kris Kristofferson song that Johnny Cash made famous, also amazing.
Friend of the podcast and also Patreon, Tony Corbett's favorite song of all time, by the way, his wife's favorite song of all time, at least, is Sunday Morning on My Mind. And I can't believe we haven't mentioned it yet, but of course, Me First and the Gimme Gimmes, who we went on tour with for a shit ton of time, they do a ton of great covers. And
they
mean
so much, it's hard to pick songs. Our listeners, people, look into my eyes that you can't see because this is a fucking podcast, but look into my eyes and realize if you love music like fast-paced punk, upbeat music,
fun music.
Go find Me First and the Gimme Gimmes. They are a bucket of brilliance, and I adore those guys. And I love fucking Spike and he only recognizes me when he's high. And when he's sober, he has no idea who I am.
Well, then he never knows who you are.
He always knows who he is.
He always knows who I am.
Their version of Summer in the Sun. We had joy, we had fun, we had seasons in the sun. Oh my God.
So much good in what they do as a band. Just the feelings they inspire. Their live music is amazing. I mean, yeah, you can't deny me for something giving me music. If you don't know who they are, go find out. Seriously, people, go find out.
You know what? I'm going to put up a couple links.
Do that.
We'll do that.
That shit out.
And we toured with them. We toured with them for a few months. Me and Mike did. I never ever saw Spike sober. Not one time. High or drunk or something. And I mean on the road in a van. In a van!
Down by the river.
Yeah.
They had a tiki bar on stage.
We were on Mannheim in the morning, and I barely remember it. Mannheim, sorry.
Mannheim was
Mannheim. Mannheim, we were doing classical music. We were having a great time. We were doing Mannheim. Mannheim in the morning in
Chicago,
and we were so fucking just stoned and drunk and stupid. Had a great time.
Great time.
Anybody else? It's a good one. And of course, our good friends Kirby and Crackle do a great version of Take Me On. One of my favorite versions of Take Me On is Kirby Crackle's version.
There you go.
Real fun.
Yeah, if you haven't listened to Kirby Crackle, you can go over to KirbyCracklemusic.com and check them out, or go to Bandcamp because they provide our geek rock music every week, and we thank them for it.
Yeah, go mix yourself a Jim Beam Me Up and listen to some of that good old cover music.
You know what? I'm going to call it right now. Next week, instead of doing the Geek Leak, we should do our top 10 covers. You guys with me? The GOAT, greatest of all time covers.
Don't, you know, why are you going to fuck with our format, man?
Yeah, you're going to fuck with
it. Because I like to.
Now, because our Patreon subscribers expect the Geek Leak. And speaking of the Geek Leak, if for just $1 a month, you can become
$1?
It's crazy. $1. You can become our Patreon and get an extra podcast every week. The Geek Leak. It may be a drip for you, but it burns for us. And you can hear us talk about all the geeky things non-comic book related that we have been participating in for the past week.
Less than 4 cents a day. Less than 4 cents a day.
What? That's like $3 million.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Like what they made of the Star Trek franchise.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know we are off on Josh's tangent, but I also have a tangent that I want to go on because I forgot to mention it.
A tangential tangent
to that. I forgot to include it in the front of the long box. I have recommended different series to you. The Vision, the Batman War of Jokes and Riddles, Mr. Miracle. And what do all those things have in common? Tom King has writing them. And he has ended his 80-something issue run on Batman and is about to begin on a new old character, Adam Strange.
Oh.
It's going to be a 12-issue maxi series with his co-creator, Mitch Gerardis, who he did Sheriff of Babylon and Mr. Miracle and The Vision with. So jump on board now, boys and girls. Go tell your comic book store, I want to get Tom King's Adam Strange. You will not be disappointed. And also, you need to, if you haven't done so already, go tell your comic book store, I want Billionaire Island. Because that's going to be coming out in a few weeks. And that is by friend of the podcast, essentially the fifth long box guy, Mark Russell. You're going to want to get those issues too.
And I have to say, Mike, it's the fact that we are in a time and place where we can recognize talent like that and recommend things before that. I'm not going to toot my own horn here. No, I'm going to toot my own horn.
You better toot your own horn. Then she's going to leave you if you don't.
Toot my own horn at home. But here on the podcast, I'm going to say, like, I knew the Spider-Verse was on point. Tom King and Mark Russell, on point all the time.
Yeah.
They are
on point. Spider-Verse.
I called the Spider-Verse
like 6 months before it came on.
As the best Marvel movie that year, and I was not wrong. I was not wrong. And these guys, yeah, like I said, like you said, Mike, I mean, the recommendations that come out from that space, it's comforting in a way that the industry we follow does have certain rock-solid attributes. And people should just go out and find those things. And I hope that he and Mark Russell and the people that work with him sort of expand that tree out into the world where we can follow them everywhere where they go.
And the thing that's going to make Adam Strange great is because, one, it's sci-fi, right? And if you're not aware, we'll do a whole episode on Adam Strange just to get you up to date. But the take that Tom King is going with is the colonialism. And he's going to be looking at those themes as it relates to Adam Strange and his travels around the universe.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It sounds great. Let me just do a quick minute on social justice and social relevancy. And that is because we talked about Star Trek. Star Trek is insanely progressive. And I don't just mean socialist. A lot of people have called it a socialist. I mean progressive. And in the way that they want to progress society forward in ways that benefit everyone. In the Star Trek universe, there's no real money. Everyone can do what they want. There are replicators. There is very little hunger. There's very little need for work. But people work because they like to work. And Star Trek is often said to be the first place where an interracial kiss first took place on television. Yep. It's not exactly true, because you can go back to I Love Lucy, and Lucy and Desi Arnaz were absolutely, you know, Cuban. And, you know, it kind of depends on what – if your narrow definition is only African-American, then fine. But my point is, and I do have one, Star Trek was progressive in a time when progressivism wasn't the norm. And they came under a lot of fire for that. And the network came under a lot of fire for that. So a lot of kudos should go to NBC for keeping Star Trek and Ray and Roddenberry on the air in a time when it wasn't exactly politically viable for them to have this kind of show. They wrapped it up in the foil of science fiction, and it was just terrific.
Wasn't it CBS?
Was it CBS? I thought it was NBC.
CBS.
No, CBS. Thank you.
Maybe NBC. CBS owns it now. I can't imagine why they – but I think it was NBC originally.
I think it was originally NBC, my friends.
Yeah, I agree. CBS owns it now, but I think NBC originally had it. If only there was some magical box.
Some magical
like a tricorder
box.
Or something that you NBC. Could just ask –
Oh, series originally aired September 1966, June from 66 to June 1969 on NBC.
Thank you very much for the fact check. I don't mind being fact checked. I was pretty sure NBC was correct. Just
CBS purchased the rights in 2006.
Yeah.
For probably $5,000.
Apologize, my friend. You're trying to further our knowledge into this fantastic genre that we both love.
Has anybody seen Picard?
No,
I haven't watched. I don't.
When did it drop? I didn't drop.
First episode premiered last week. Tom, you're the only one who has that fucking CBS.
CBS All
I do have CBS All Access. I'll watch it this week, and I'll give you a little rundown of it.
Well, I'm coming. Go do it. I don't
Are
mean
you, audio now. Audio boy.
More like leakage.
CBS All Access.
It's more like the Geek League.
Are we all doing access because we all sucked a dick?
Yeah. We all sucked a right dick.
That's not why we're doing the accent.
To get that joke, you'll have to subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah. Subscribe to the Patreon. Lads. You'll know what we're talking about. And then
you'll not know until you give us that one goddamn dollar a month, you cheap prick.
The
brutal
smile in me while. Get it in there.
hear about the one time I open mouth kissed a horse?
Yeah. Giant melons taking up the whole screen.
Better in an accent. And that'll just
about we're terrible human beings.
Today on the Longbox Guys.
Just in case anybody out there was listening and didn't know, we are terrible human beings. But we're circling around.
We're circling around to be better.
We're trying to be better for everyone out there every day. We're striving for greatness.
That's right.
But I'm not, you know.
I'm doing my best over here.
My best. Just help me out.
I'm just trying to build up karma points so I can someday rip a hooker in half. That's my goal.
Just gotta have a tab for it though. You can't.
Yeah, and it's mine's running. Let's go to plugs. And I want to plug the fact that Tom King is coming to Pensacon.
Is he?
What?
What?
Is
oh,
he?
Absolutely.
We gotta meet that guy.
Yep. God damn, I'm 99% sure I saw Tom King on the list.
I'm checking now.
Double check.
99% sure you're drunk, sir.
Oh, I am drunk.
Are those two things mutually exclusive?
Nope. Usually.
Can it be both?
Can it be both?
I would like to thank the NOLA nerd couple. Because they are celebrating the 9th year of their blog. I invited Mr. NOLA Nerd to come join us on the podcast when he's feeling better so he can join us and talk about the rise of Skywalker, which we have yet to talk about on the podcast.
And I finally saw it.
You finally saw it? Good. All right, great. Hopefully we can get Mr. NOLA Nerd, and we'll do that soon. And I would also like to thank GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hello, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com. Good friends of the podcast who provide all of our t-shirt needs and all our stained glass print needs. Official stained glass provider of John Barrowman. And if you have not seen their fucking stained glass beholder, it is mwah. Every D&D fan out there should get one of those.
The beauty is not only in the eye of that thing, but also in mine.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. And, I'd like to plug Pensacon. Pensacon's coming up. And once again, I believe Tom King's coming. Josh, you're checking that for us.
Wrong.
The things you believe are not always true. This is
it's not true?
Oh, wait. You mean Tom King's alias, Weird Al Yankovic?
People
get those two confused all the time.
All the time.
And also, DDP will be there.
Yeah, I fucking hope he's going to do some yoga while he's there, because I'm totally doing yoga with DDP.
I'm doing yoga with DDP. I hope he's nicer to me than Erin Gray is every year when I do Tai Chi with her, because she's a total bitch to me.
She is such a sweetheart to everyone but you.
Oh, my God. She's always such an asshole. Tom.
This is how she's an asshole. So, Tom, you look really tense. You need to relax.
Which I can't relax. Tense I have a up even more. Because I'm sitting next to a domineering from fucking Buck Rogers, and I'm trying not to show it, but I'm wearing sweatpants.
Try not to square you off your shoulders so much. Relax your shoulders a little bit, Tom.
She just told me to stop flexing my shoulders 6 times at 6 different cons now. You know what? I'm kind of sick of it.
Relax your shoulders.
Do you think possibly you should just take her fucking advice so you don't get yelled at all the time?
Tom, can you just a little bit, Tom?
So yoga with DDP.
Yoga with DDP.
Yoga with DDP. Let's do that instead.
Fucking A.
And we're going to get our photos taken with the cast of the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon.
Yeah.
We are all going to look phenomenal.
Phenomenal.
My costume is going to be a hodgepodge of hot shit.
I've been working on my costume.
I don't
costume
know what that means.
It means Diane is going to be embarrassed to be seen next to me.
I
more so than normal.
I've literally been working on my costume for a year. I can't wait to meet the voice of Sheila the Thief from Dungeons and Dragons cartoon, dressed as my interpretation of Sheila the Thief. I haven't come up with a male name for Sheila. What's a male name for Sheila?
Sheila.
Sheila, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to own that shit.
Shel Silverstein, the thief.
Shel Silverstein, the thief.
Kind of like and you can always cast the spell Jewish Lightning if you want.
Nice. Nice callback, Josh.
Thanks.
Mike, what's this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Josh, you killed our Lord and Savior.
Yeah, well, yeah, he was.
Was Golgotha your sector?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I still got the knotted rope hung up on my wall. Is that what you want to hear? Is that what you
want
from me?
That's what I want to hear. Yeah,
Mike just cut this shit out.
Probably night, not. I'm pretty lazy.
Yeah, I get it.
Side note, Josh and I pitched a 9-knotted rope match to a wrestling promoter, and she wouldn't do it because she didn't think people would get it. But we're like, who gives a fuck if people get it?
Get it?
It's a 9-knotted rope match. Yeah. You let us do the Battle Royal of St. Crispin's Day, but you wouldn't let us do the 9-knotted rope match? What the fuck?
Yeah. We're going to whip the shit out of the merchants right out of that place.
That's right. We just would have gone to the bartender and just beat the fuck out of the bartender.
That's pretty
It would have been awesome. No one got that but us. Tommy. Any words of wisdom for us?
This definitely is not the podcast you desire. But man, is it ever the podcast you deserve?
Goddamn right it is.
Absolutely.
And on that note, don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love. And I love you guys. And I love our listeners. See you next week on the podcast.
Thanks, guys.
Do you know much about the history of when they started making the comic books? I don't. I didn't research
1967.
All right.
You know how you know that?
I binged it.
Yeah, binged it.